Welcome, welcome, welcome. This Distraction Pieces podcast. My name is Scroobius Pip. This is episode, I don't know what number episode this is. I'll be completely honest with you. About 106, 107. I don't know, around that. And we're doing a drunk cast. And we're in the Whiff Inn. It's brought to you by Speech of Element Records, obviously. SpeechofElementRecords.com. We've got the new caps out now, which everyone seems very excited about. I've been doing some live videos about that. They've been going down a treat. And obviously, I need to push the next Wednesday, in fact. This is the last podcast until the birthday one at the Leicester Square Theatre in London. So come along to that, please. Tickets are available in the blog at scroobiuspip.co.uk. This is one of our drunk cast episodes, or one part. Obviously, they normally end up being two or three parters. And I'm joined by Chris.
Hello.
And Stu.
What's up?
There we go. Classics again. And we'll get into that and we'll talk more in a moment. So I think that's the intro done. So let's begin. And that's where the music will just have been. How are you guys?
Good.
Splendid.
Chris, do you want to be anywhere near the microphone, or are you good at the other end of the garden?
This chair sort of breaks every time.
The chair does drop. He was end up stretching, looking a bit Live Aid there, trying to reach the mic.
I've got
there
quite we go. A long neck, but not long enough. Long
there we go. I am Chris near the mic now.
Thank you.
Good. Is that better? Good. Good. We just did a bit of a Facebook Live thing, didn't we?
Yeah, and had some booze already.
Yeah, we're already a bit boozed up, which is a good start. I think this one could get really messy because it's one of the hottest days of the year. So I think the drinks are going to go down pretty swiftly, right?
I think we've realised, listening back, haven't we, that the first one, it takes a little while for us to kind of start being horrible to each other.
Loosen up.
Whereas I think we thought if we just quaffed a load of booze...
As soon as I saw you today, you started laying into me, actually.
Yeah.
You did mock him quite swiftly, but so how are you feeling about the ones we've done so far? In fact, this is the first one since episode 4 of the last drunk cast is the most downloaded podcast of Distraction Pieces in the first 48 hours. There's ones that have had more, but in the first 48 hours that's the most downloaded. It had, as I told everyone, it had my favorite ending, had a beautiful story from Stu at the end, and but how are you feeling about the drunk cast?
I love the drunk cast, but when you said that, I don't know if anyone's aware. I think at the end of the last drunk cast, you explained how I left this building.
Yeah,
and
the state
I was in.
Yep. You generally get. It's weird because is this the fourth one we've done?
This will be the fourth.
Yeah.
This fourth, because that's it. The first one, you got horrifically drunk.
Mm.
The second one, you reined it in a bit.
Yeah.
And I think that gave you confidence because in the third one, you got horrifically drunk again. And you left in quite a state.
Just an idiot.
And then the next day I woke up and it was all a black spot. So I knew, oh no.
That's my favourite point, though.
And then I get real anxious about it, and you guys don't help me with that anxiety. No. And then I listen back, and to listen yourself get that drunk, and your brain, it just sounded like my brain was leaking out my ears.
When you're feeling like, shit, did I do that last night? And it's just, what you don't need at that point is one of your mates going, oh man, you were really bad last night.
And Stu's the best at this, because Chris will wake up going, oh, I don't remember the last one, and Stu will just say, you're an awful human, or something along them lines.
Purely to ease my own anxiety.
Yeah.
But then when you listen to them, you tend to agree that you are an awful human.
No, I am. And that last one. So I'd gone through that, and I'd listened to it with a friend, Aaron, and he was in tears, but he was also in tears for, you know, because of how awful I was getting. And then after that, then you started messaging me going, oh, good news, the fourth episode's had 38,000 downloads. And I literally had a breakdown. Because listening to yourself, and listening to yourself anyways bad, listening to yourself after that much booze was... I had to go and read a book because I felt such an idiot. I had to go.
What I loved about that one, from my memory, again, I don't listen back to him, is... me and you, Stu, seem to get to the drunk point where we'd suddenly become calm and articulate again.
Yeah.
And Chris went got stuck in the really messy point. So there was a few points in that last one. There was a great bit of conversation on the topic of trans agenda culture, and someone actually commented saying that was a great discussion. Really liked all the points made. I do wonder if it was maybe something that would benefit from a sober conversation instead. Which, interestingly, I disagree, because I think it being a drunk conversation between blokes hopefully makes it more relatable and makes you realise how. Do you know what I mean? Because
we don't sit here and pre-plat. Obviously, you can probably, if anyone's listening to this now, you can tell we don't very loosely plan anything we talk about.
But that's it. I think any slip ups that we have in being clear or articulate are cancelled out by the fact, again, I think it's particularly in the kind of area that we come from, and Jordan Gray, who we discussed in that, comes from around here. There's a lot of lads, and I remember doing, when I did a podcast with Neil Maskell, he was saying he wants to do a podcast with his nan, because she's the most open-minded, welcoming of immigration and everything, but she sounds like the most Cockney person in the world ever, and that's far more relatable. It's easy for a well-educated, posh, left-wing person to profess the fact that these things should be changed and these views should be changed, but you're going to be able to relate more if you're your typical Essex bloke to three drunk blokes going, what's the fucking problem? It's just everyone's born how they, you know, people are who they are. You can be who you want. It doesn't matter. So for me, although I understood her point saying it was great, but it's a serious topic and could have made, I couldn't disagree more. I think it benefited only because we didn't say anything offensive. If we'd fucked up and said something offensive, then I'd agree. But I think the spirit came across and it was a really nice discussion.
But mostly the offensive stuff we come out with is because we find that stuff funny. And in the sense of, when we find it funny, it's because it's the opposite of normally what we think. So I don't think you have to worry too much.
Or Joe Rogan says a lot in his stand-up. He says, I'm joking.
If
half the stuff I said on stage was true, I'd be a terrible human. I'm joking. It's a joke. Yeah. So there's an element of that.
I'm clearly not being serious.
But there are a few things that the last ones have shown us, and some new rules that we're bringing in, which I've noted, and one of the new rules is no full names. And the reason for that is we talk about ourselves, but then we also get drunk and talk about our mates. And our mates haven't agreed to be part of this and haven't agreed for their stories to be shared. And what happened was, the thing that brought it to my attention was one of our mates he said something on Facebook and was having a chat. I commented, or someone else commented, and then someone commented who had added him just because of the drunk cast, and had a bit of a dig, like in a friendly way, but the way I kind of like, or just basically people hear this and don't know how to act, and that sounds like I'm having a go or being harsh, but if we're on a night out and I see the opportunity to give Chris a really good dead arm, I'll give him a dead arm, and he'll be like, oh, that's annoying.
Yeah.
If a stranger walks up and gives you a dead arm, we're probably all going to pile in on this bloke, because it's that thing. And it's the same with that. The person who made a joke was only joking about stuff that we've joked about on the podcast, but they're not in that circle. No. So you've just walked up to a stranger and gone, oh, how about this, or whatever else. And so that's one of the rules I've wanted to bring in, just to make sure people stay in the appropriate lane in that respect. Because, again, it's fine if you want to dig any of us out on Twitter or Facebook, you're welcome, because we're getting drunk, recording it and broadcasting it to the world, so that's our fault. But that's something that jumped out to me.
Speaking of being dug out...
oh, God.
I got recognised at We Are Lizards.
Yeah.
I was just standing outside and someone had come to our club night and went, are you Stu Whiffing from the drunk cast? And I went...
All proud?
Yeah, and he went, mate, you don't look 53. And I thought, I'm 42, you prick. And I just thought, I had about 2 seconds of just thinking, feels quite nice.
Famous. Oh, you've had it a load now at the Progress shows, haven't you? Like, whenever we go to the Progress shows, there's a few people who recognise us both from the drunk cast.
That is because I'm with you, you know. Yeah. If I was just walking through there, they wouldn't notice. But
still, it's...
It's because I'm walking through, they're going, I'm on the drunk cast with this guy. I've got a t-shirt.
Chris Glasson coming through.
Yeah.
Chris Glasson, big Chrissy coming through. Ooh, yummy.
Someone give him a dead arm.
Old Chrissy Gold Touch.
Before we get into things, I need to mention Progress, because I went to a Progress event, which neither of you were about for, actually. You were at Glastonbury, and you weren't about. Yeah. And I won't go into it in huge detail, because neither of you were there, but it was the best one I've ever been to. It was genuinely... I thought about not going because I was going on my own. Mm. And we had a lizard the night before. And I thought, all right, I probably won't go.
Yeah.
And then I went, and I was so glad I did. So, yeah, I'm just giving love and a shout-out to Progress Wrestling. But we've discussed them a lot on this, so we don't need to go into it again. But I will give a plug for Progress, their big show on September 25th. At Brixton Academy, and it's their biggest event. It's looking like they're going to sell it out, which is insane. A wrestling event selling out Brixton Academy, iconic venue. So yeah, that's going to be great. But go along to that, and also if you're into wrestling, check out Tuesday Night Jaw on the Distraction Pieces Network. Last week, Jim Smallman spoke to William Regal, and it's one of the best episodes I've ever heard.
You know what?
Go on.
I don't like wrestling. You know that.
Yeah.
I feel bad because I haven't actually listened to that podcast yet. Yeah. Tell me a bit about it. Just to give
Again, if you've never listened, I'd recommend a listen to this recent one with William Regal, because it's interesting with Tuesday Night Jaw, because a lot of them, I would say, if you're not into wrestling, don't listen.
Yeah.
And that's why we did it as a separate thing rather than Distraction Pieces, because I feel with Distraction Pieces, if you know of the person or not, they're generally engaging enough. But a lot of the Tuesday Night Jaw episodes are proper about wrestling, and we do one a month where it's the Tuesday after a big pay-per-view, and we discuss it and we nerd out, and it's great fun. But he did one last week with this guy, William Regal, who was in the WWE for a while. He's a British wrestler, but he came up, he started wrestling at 15 and was wrestling Blackpool Pleasure Beach, or whatever it's called, in the pier. And his stories are just absolutely amazing, because in them days as well, in the old British wrestling days in the 80s, they used to do a thing where, to drum up excitement and interest, the wrestlers would go out and ask people who wants to come and challenge them. And they'd often have plants, but then every now and then they'd have to deal with someone. But equally, if anyone's been to Blackpool, you'll know it's a bit of a boozy place.
Yeah.
And they were saying they'd regularly have to deal with people who are jumping in and getting involved. And one of the guys... he tried to warn the guy, but he was a guy on the opposite team, so he had to try and be discreet about it. But this old lady had come out from the front row with a hairpin and stabbed it through the guy's thigh.
Jesus.
And honestly, he's got story after story. He was then touring in Germany and that. And all before he went to America, he did Japan and all this amazing stuff. And then he got in the WWE and was big, and he now runs NXT, and he's a bit of a legend. But... yeah, it's just the best stories, because it is just an old school, a British bloke just telling stories about fights on the pier in Blackpool.
See, that's like my beginning and end of wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously, again, it's documented, I'm well old. Like
53.
I was a
Regal tagged with Big Daddy.
And it was Big Daddy, Kendo Nagasaki, and...
and Mick McManus.
Mick McManus, and it was Saturday night, Saturday lunchtime wrestling, and it was the nuts when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and then I kind of got a bit too old when everyone got into Hulk Hogan and stuff like that, and I missed that.
Yeah,
I think
you're going to have to come along to one of the Progress.
Oh, well, I said on the last one, I really would, but I'm up for it.
Because I've mentioned this a million times, but we did go a little bit skeptically.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of went going, all right, it's a free day out, and it was. It's amazing.
Blown away. And I did think, when you were saying to me, because I couldn't make it because of glass, though.
Yeah.
I thought you were just trying to rub my nose into it, and you were like, oh, man, this was the best one ever. But then he's told me about it, and it did sound...
I told you about the stuff that happened. And it's crazy, because also they're a young company, so they're 4 years old now. So they've got... So a lot of it is wrestlers who've come from other places, but they've also got their own gym. So they've got a few wrestlers who've literally come through the ranks in front of that crowd. So it's the same thing as a football team.
So they've got a lot of stable of fighters.
Yeah, so it's the same as a football team, that you've got those people that you've seen develop and get better and better. And one of them unexpectedly won the title at this event. I was at the other week. And literally all the chairs in the electric ballroom were knocked over as the crowd carried this guy around the ballroom, just going mental. And it was one of the most amazing experiences. And that's a bit of a spoiler, but I haven't said who, so it's all right. But yeah, it's really good fun.
Was it you?
You couldn't make it. I mean, we all joke, and we do want to get onto some of Chris' sexual exploits at some point. We've decided that's going to be one of our topics. But
before we do that, talking of sexual exploits,
yeah,
I just would like to add that on listening back to the last podcast about my sexual assault on a pensioner.
Yeah.
oh, man, that just never sounds good.
What was listening back, obviously, when we actually got to the point that it was a stitch-up and it was a joke.
Yeah.
The fact that Chris was
too drunk to know it wasn't.
And was still concerned.
Yeah.
That
was quite amusing.
That I'd done that. But,
it's because I don't completely believe that you didn't.
When I listened to it back and it was split into three or four.
Four.
At the end of the first three. Oh, we must make sure that on the next podcast we discuss Stuart's sexual assault of an elderly lady. See you next week. Bye. And I just thought, all of these people are going to think, Jesus, what is that?
Stuart is rapey.
But that is why I was getting onto this, because the reason that you couldn't make it, Stu, is because it was your wedding anniversary.
It was.
So, and that's, again, I think that's a good thing. It's a tough thing to hold shit together for years and years and years. So I thought that was a positive thing. And I wanted to ask things like, what was your first dance? Or do you remember? Obviously, it was a long time ago. You're old as fuck.
More fun, can we guess? Could you guess what his first dance would be?
It's got to be a Smith song.
Oh, exactly. I'm on Smiths as well. Tell us it was a Smith song.
You're talking about the wedding?
Yeah.
Okay. What we're discussing, yeah.
But again, first of all, congratulations to you and the missus on 10 years. That's fantastic.
That's cool.
Chris, do you want to be horrible at this point?
No, I did have a few things to say, but I'm all right.
See, I'm starting to now note some nice stuff as well as all of the digs, because that's what worked. I think that's where we got the balance on the last one, where there was some genuinely nice bits as well as us being dicks. But yeah. What was your...
We walked out, because we had our children by the time we got married.
Yeah.
And we carried... They were babies, so we carried them. We all come down the aisle together with the children to Be My Baby by the Ronettes.
Nice.
Which is the greatest record ever made. And then our first dance, we actually had an Elvis impersonator at our wedding.
This is heaven.
And we had Fat Elvis... And
you're from Essex, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Right.
And so we had Fat Elvis singing Love Me Tender.
Amazing.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
I love
nice.
That. Yeah. Which now I'm going to ask Chris two questions. Yeah. This relates to the last two conversations. Yeah. What would be your wrestling walkout music?
Okay.
And what would be your first dance music?
Okay. Wrestling, I don't know. Like if I had my...
Mixed martial arts walkout. Because we'll get to Bellator.
It's a guilty pleasure song. But I don't I know think it's I'd be, be able to not be break
don't
stuff.
Go mash it. Oh, you know.
Break
no.
stuff by Limp Bizkit.
But the problem with that would be that I'd get so hyped before getting in the ring. I'd gas. I promise you.
Gas on route.
I'd gas on it. And I've thought about that long and hard, and sometimes, you know, just don't lie to yourself.
It's true.
I'm not trying to be pretentious.
I've seen you in the DJ booth, Chris. You do get excited. You would be gassed.
So good.
And have you got a first, what you'd pick as your first dance? That's not as easy.
If I got married.
Pony.
Pony.
My favourite.
So good.
Bow. That was a lot in the last
all the family
class.
In a circle. And just
bow. 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 It would, I don't know, like one of my favourite love songs is Al Green, and I've just forgotten the name of it.
Let's Classic, Stay Together.
Great choice.
Let's Stay Together, obviously. So I like that. But I wouldn't play that compulsorily, because, you know, I think that has to be, you know, what would you and your
dance,
what would
I
you
guess.
And your
it kind of feels a bit like misses. It's you kind of at the end of your tether already.
yeah.
So like, come on, let's just try and Stay Together.
Why are we talking about this? Can I just get a little story of it? Because before we booked Elvis, we tried to book a Jackson tribute, because my missus loves Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
thanks for explaining,
Michael,
why.
Not Bianca. And, so we went to the one and only time I've ever been to, what was the place at Bas Vegas?
Which one? Jumping Jacks.
So I went to Jumping Jacks at Vegas to see this Jackson tribute act. Mm-hmm. And so I looked him up online, and he'd been to Neverland, and he'd had the surgery, and he looked fucking amazing. His moves were bang on.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was really blown away. I was like, this is fucking great. So anyway, afterwards, I thought, right, I'll go and speak to him about booking him.
Mm.
And there was loads of kind of women queuing up to meet him and have photos.
Yeah.
And as they're queuing up, I could hear like, oh, thank you very much. It's really nice to know that you like what I do.
Mm.
And I was thinking, excuse us for real. He's, you know, he's the whole thing.
Mm, yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, thank you for the picture. And he walked off. And then so I'm standing there for like 10 minutes watching him go for this routine, staying in character. And I've just gone like, oh, hello. And he's gone like, oh, hi. I said, I thought that was really great. Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming out tonight, blah, blah, blah. And I went, I'd be interested in booking you. Like, I'm getting married soon. I'd really like to book you. And he went, can we talk about this a little later? I said, well, like, I'm going there. Like, have you got any contacts in there? To which he replied, look, it's going to cost you 500 notes and I work in River Island. If you want to pop over there on Monday, we can sort this out. And you just think, oh, man, where's the magic there?
The magic's gone.
I remember the magic's gone. And me and Dan were doing a festival once and we were headlining this festival and it's all like, oh, man, we're headlining the stage. But when we got there, the band that was on were a Prodigy, a tribute band. And they were all right. I think they're called Jilted Generation. But the thing that slayed me was they were at the side of the stage later signing autographs.
Brilliant. What were they signing?
Exactly. That's what I was like, are you signing your... Are you copying Keith Flint's or are you doing... And I was texting Liam Howlett at the time, just going, I'm watching a fake Liam Howlett sign autographs at a festival. And he was like, is it Jilted Generation? I was like, yep. It's like, yeah, they get about.
Amazing.
That's brilliant. Have they just... Like, someone got like, saying like, Trevor... Like signed on like a flyer with
I mean, I imagine they actually signed it.
Have you ever seen a tribute that's like you've been impressed with?
I was going to say it was a tribute, but it actually was the band. I went to see The Doors minus Jim Morrison.
Who was singing in Astonbury from the Cult?
Yeah, and it was insane. It was about 2004. At that point, I was completely in love with The Doors.
You say that because the only one I've seen that blew me away was the Australian Doors that I saw in about 1992.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have seen Ian Astonbury sing.
There was a very short period in UK legislation where they were selling magic mushrooms legally, and obviously in Camden they were doing that. So me and my friends, we'd finish uni, and I think we just got our grades or whatever, and they were playing, and we thought, well, we heard they're selling magic mushrooms in Camden, we're going to go and see The Doors. You know, we're gonna let's go and do that, and it was crazy. It was a crazy gig, but I remember we got so high that when it finished, we hadn't realised quite how wasted we got, and it finished, and it was just like me, Paul, and James, and we basically all had our tops off.
Classic.
No one else had their tops off in the rafters, and at that point, I had laughing fits. I couldn't pick myself up off the chair. And that was really sobering because none of the attention was on us when the band was on.
Sorry. Picking myself up off the chair. Were you sitting down at this
gig? I was lying over chairs.
All right.
Yeah, and then all the attention was on us because we couldn't control our
lives,
our bodily functions.
Good Lord. Well, anyway, to get back on track. Or onto Bellator. Or my walkout music and first dance. My first dance would be a Napoleon's solo by At The Drive-In. My missus would hate that. She wouldn't be happy about it, I'm sure. Wow. But
we were listening to that on the way to Bellator at the drive-in.
We were, and we were listening to that exact song, actually, because we listened to it on loop.
Mm.
Don't know if anyone noticed, but because on my way to get Chris, I'm trying to write a scene to that song for a film I'm working on, and I had it on loop. And then we got in the car and chatted, and it wasn't until we pulled up that I was like, that's just been the same song.
I have no issue with that.
The whole time, but what a tune.
What a fucking great band.
They were amazing live. I saw them earlier this year, I think.
Yeah, we got tickets at Roundhouse. Yeah,
or we went to Progress and then on to At The Drive-In, didn't we?
Insane. Yeah.
I went and hung out with Cedric quickly beforehand.
Yeah, man, like, it was so nice.
My homie.
And we thought we might only stay for a few, and but they were just so live. Oh, we just
so
stayed.
Good live. But speaking of it, so my walkout music, and we've always discussed this, and I've discussed I'd have old wrestling themes and all this, but it's changed after after Bellator because of a young man called Chase. I can't remember his surname.
Oh, of course, yeah.
This lad at Bellator was the first person to have walkout music, and he walked down the ramp, and the music started. I was like, I don't know this, and then I started to excitedly tap Chris and Stu and say, he's got a mic in his hand.
Yeah.
At which point he pulled the mic up and started to sing his own original kind of chilled R&B track to walk himself out to the cage. So I'd definitely, I'd do one of my own songs. My walkout music would be me doing one of my own songs.
I thought that was incredible because he actually got smashed as well, didn't he?
He didn't get smashed. He lost, but he was clearly a bit of a stand-up guy. He's a young lad, and he was against this guy who we'd seen at Bama before. I can't remember his name, but he's a really good he's a wrestler. He's a British lad. Yeah. He's got Brad Pickett as his coach, and he ground him out.
Do you know what
he wrestled him out
and the biggest fuck-off thighs I'd ever seen. Yeah, he was a real strong fella, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he out wrestled him and dealt with him, but he wasn't an awful fighter. He showed a bit of stand up.
I don't know. Like he was quite technical, but he didn't seem to really want to hurt the guy.
I wondered if he's out of Venom, of Page's camp, because they said he's from London, and Venom's that similar thing of being very much about his stand up.
Yeah.
Again, this kid wasn't anywhere near him, but you can imagine if you're training with him that you'll be a bit. I'm a bit flashy, but then at that stage, if you get a really good wrestler, then you're fucked. But I mean, let's just get straight onto Venom Page. It should have been called Bellator Presents Michael Venom Page, because he was the whole
wasn't he? Special.
Do you do a thing like when people listen to this where they can access sort of pictures and stuff?
Yeah, on Acast, there's links and tags to images and that.
The celebration was amazing.
Yeah,
post-fight pic.
Buddy Peace will add this, but I posted it on Instagram and on Facebook, and Mr. Page commented and thanked me for sharing it, which was nice.
Oh,
but
no way.
His finish was amazing. It was a counter-jumping knee. No one does jumping knees as a counter-strike. That's generally an attack.
Yeah.
That's not on your back foot. As they're coming at you, jump up and knee him.
Switch.
Then
him.
The guy drops, and Mr. Page just he knows what he's doing. He knows the damn thing, because he instantly went over to the edge of the cage and got a Pokemon hat and a Pokemon ball, held the ball up, rolled it towards his downed opponent, and then did the celebration that the kid in Pokemon Ash does when he catches. And some people said maybe it's disrespectful. He checked on the guy afterwards. For me, it was just right. Not only have you got this cool gimmicks celebration that will go viral, you've also done one of the best knockouts of the year a split second before. Yeah. So either of them would have got a lot of sharing and hype on their own. Together, that felt like a legendary moment in MMA, because it was a beautiful strike.
We said as we come out, didn't we, that like felt quite privileged that we have watched something that's going to be on a highlight reel forever.
Yeah.
Like that whole experience from when he walked out.
He owned the crowd, didn't
he? When he walked out, I've never seen a crowd go like that. Even like in all the other events we see, everyone started shouting MVP. Then he had the whole crowd clapping in.
He done
sync.
The Iceland football kind of clap.
It was dope. And then I was sat there thinking, are we going to get this fight where it doesn't deliver?
Yeah.
And the first round was still pretty good, even though Cyborg took him down on the ground. And then the second round, just the most insane, like Sagat Tiger knee.
It's interesting.
Crushes his skull.
Because he is one of those fighters. Because the first time you and me watched one of his fights, I'd really hyped him up. I was like, this guy's amazing.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And then this guy rushed across the cage at him, and I thought, oh, shit. And he just stepped back and punched him and knocked him to the ground with his first punch. It then went on. He still got a first round finish. But he is one of those fighters that you do worry it could be derailed at any moment. But
that's the fun.
That is the fun. And, yeah, it was just absolutely, as you said, amazing to be in that crowd. And we've seen the pinnacle, or the best crowd reaction, I'd say, that I've seen with you was Randy Couture come out in Manchester.
Yeah, and that was
electric.
Fight, really.
But that was, it was electric, but it was still just people going nuts, whereas this was people specific chants for that guy, specific reactions to that guy, and then that guy owning the crowd, just turning around and controlling them, making them do what he wants.
When he landed that knee, that crack was, it echoed, didn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, it's worth saying now that, again, respect to everyone that steps in there, because that has turned out to be one of the worst injuries I've seen in MMA. Definitely. He crumbled the hardest point of the skull. And again, a lot of people say it's brutal and it shouldn't be allowed. But, you know, it is what it is. It's two grown-ups who've chosen to get in there and do this. And you've said no complaint from Cyborg, who took it. He's a warrior. He's been doing this years.
Ban skiing, snowboarding, ban racing, diving. It's just nuts. People decide to take those risks. And I mean, in MMA, there's been
there's been very few injuries of this kind. But it is funny, I saw a Ben Falks, who I think is he does some great videos on MMA, fighting.com, and he kind of did it, and he was like, it was weird that we all saw that, and we're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like, we watch a sport where people throw knees at people's heads, and then we're shocked when someone's head gets caved in. It's like, well, yeah, I guess it's inevitable in the end. And again, he's on the mend. He's stabilised in hospital. He can't fly, obviously, but he's stabilised in their fixing
him. He might think he can. I mean, like, if he's got brain damage, that's crazy.
It's brutal, and it's good that Bellator,
not yet.
To give Bellator some love, it's good that they've stood up and said, look, we're covering his medical fees, obviously. We're also going to give him his win bonus, despite the fact that's lost. Because there's a GoFundMe, which people can still donate to, because despite the fact his medical bills are covered, he may never fight again.
No, straight up, I can't.
He may never fight again. He may fight again, but he may never fight again. And this is the kind of sport and industry where...
That front part of your brain, that's if I'm not wrong, I think that's emotion, isn't it?
Right.
And like, I'm rationalising emotion.
Yeah.
And like, you don't know what kind of effect that's going to have. You know?
I don't seriously know how they're going to repair that.
His ex-wife, Cyborg, of the UFC and of the women's division...
I never knew that.
Yeah. So she started, she posted the GoFundMe, and she was the first to post the scans.
What do you reckon? What's their first dance?
Their first dance, break stuff.
Yeah, boy.
But yeah, a hell of an event, and everything else in the event was good. Matt Mitrione looked good.
You know what? Right,
the main event was cool.
The main event was alright, wasn't it? But like, you know, Daly just got sort of lent on a lot, didn't he? And you know,
yeah, he got outdone,
and it was a shame. But that's the thing. Everyone's talking MVP, and I understand that. Mitrione fight was fucking
great.
They stood and banged, didn't they? And it was brilliant.
Me and Pip were talking about that, and we have always done. One of the reasons why I love Mitrione so much is because he uses a skill that's overlooked a lot, which is he's constantly seen as an underdog. He's constantly seen as a bit stupid. Even his nickname, Meathead, it can be farther from the truth with Mitrione.
He's an intelligent fighter. Even his striking and his angles and everything, he fights intelligently.
He was pro American footballer, wasn't he?
He was a pro footballer, yeah. In the season of The Ultimate Fighter that Brendan Schaub was on, him, Brendan and one other... Kimbo was on there. In fact, we got a lot of love for that, because weirdly the drunk cast came out just after Kimbo died. And we spoke about Kimbo on that podcast. Yeah. And a lot of people showed a lot of love, because we spoke really positive and respectfully about Kimbo, because he had mixed receptions and he's had some rough fights. But the fact is, as we said in the podcast, he knew what he was. He knew he came into MMA late. And he was learning, and he had a certain skill set. He wasn't this elite athlete, because he came in with shot knees already. But it was—I was really pleased. I panicked for a second, obviously saddened to hear him pass. But then I thought, hang on, we discussed him when we were drunk.
Yeah,
I hope, like, if we said anything inappropriate, then that's that shit. But it was nice that we got a lot of love for that. We were just really positive.
And he should have headlined on Saturday, shouldn't he?
Yeah. He was due to headline. While we're in episode one, we've got a giveaway this week. I've not even told you this. Have you seen Say Anything?
No.
It's one of my favourite 80s films. Cusack. John Cusack holding up a ghetto blaster.
That is one of his fucking good.
It's classic 80s. But
where did you get that?
Well, I'll tell you now, I got sent, it's weird, because I saw this toy, I did a post, because Say Anything is one of my favourite films of all time. It's classic John Cusack, absolutely amazing. And I did a post on Cusack's birthday, actually, saying that Say Anything and Gross Point Blank, in my opinion, are two perfect films.
Yeah.
High Fidelity ain't far off.
Yeah.
And Love and Mercy,
he's just got a lot of films. Yeah, Love and Mercy. He's got tons of films. He's just great. And I did this post. Con Air's an absolute classic.
Still love
no,
it.
Never diss Con Air. What? Don't ever diss Con Air. No,
when
I'm not
people,
joking at all.
People get jumpy about that. It's like, come on, classic. Man, that's a good film.
The Prince Charles Cinema used to do a beer and pizza night, and it was always films like Con Air or The Rock and stuff like that. They're just great.
They're perfect.
You get a beer
Nicolas
and a slice of pizza
well,
with it.
Lethal Weapon. Yeah.
But I mentioned that, and this guy from Vinyl Idols got in touch and said, oh, we do these Say Anything toys of Lloyd Dobler. And I was like, all right, no, the actual company he's from is called something like Large Evil Corp or Big Evil Corp.
Evil Corp, I saw it on
Evil
the
Corp,
note.
Evil Corp, because I saw it on the note. And they're really nice toys, and he sent it to me, and I messaged him slightly awkwardly saying, oh, it was broken. And I said, I'm only letting you know because if you've got insurance on the postage, because it's like, I said, I can fix it easily. It's just his arms are snapped, I can glue it. Mm-hmm. And 2 days later, another one appeared. So I've now got two, and they're both fixed and good. So I thought I'd give one away on the podcast. But I was going to ask you guys to come up with a question with me that's to do with Say Anything, but there's
long time.
Neither of you have seen it, or you've not seen it in a while. I need to think of something then. What did she give him in exchange for his heart? There's a great quote, and it's where he says, "I gave her my heart."
Yeah,
and then he says that she gave him something. So tweet any of us and do hashtag drunkcast or no hashtag say drunkcast, hashtag say drunkcast, and the first one that I see, maybe I'll contact you and we'll send that off to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a little pre-gift, and big love to Vinyl Idols and Evil Corp.
Do you know what? Obviously, you can't see that, but it's the nuts.
It's a really good-looking toy, isn't it? I'll try and post a picture of it as well, or I'll send a picture to Buddy to tag it on the Acast thing, but that's that.
Nice.
Where should we go next, guys? I've got a few stories that I've promised people I'll tell, but I want to spread them out. So which one would you... I'll let you guys choose which one you want from me. The police station?
Oh, God, I've been waiting to hear this for like...
Or should we get... straight into the police station one then, because I've also got the topless funeral.
Save that.
We'll save the topless funeral.
Save it like you saved me raping a pensioner.
Yeah, we'll save that. So
didn't do that
the other
he
night.
Didn't save the pensioner. Though,
I've not
he?
Told either of you.
Can
this.
I have a beer, please?
Chris wants a beer to get comfortable for this towel. The other night, me and Mutt and Stu. I'm not this Stu, HMV and Laindon Stu. I'm being careful not to use surnames.
Surname, that's,
but that's not career low Stu, is it?
No, that's Stu 76, and we were allowed to say his name because that's his professional name as a producer. So other Stu, we went to see Paul Heyman do a talk, and Paul Heyman is an old manager. He ran ECW. He was a he manages Brock Lesnar in the WWF, actually.
Oh, right.
So he's Brock Lesnar's like guy. So he's this big guy, he's a great talker. But anyway, it was a really good night. He told some good stories. He got our boy Will Ospreay up on stage, Chris. Chris is reading stuff on the wall at the moment as I'm telling my story, and Stu seems to be on his phone.
I'm
really
actually
glad I started this. Thanks, guys. I'm going to talk for a minute, so if you want to just leave the room.
You're talking about some bloke who now manages ECW, or used to manage ECW.
He got Will Ospreay up on stage and offered him a contract for a big American company. So that was just cool because we're a fan of Will Ospreay. But anyway... Yeah. So that ends, and we're walking to Bethnal Green Station, and there's this car, these two cars have pulled over, and this young lad has got out, and he's shouting at this old man in the car, and saying, like, you hit me, or you nearly hit me, or something. And there's two lads in this car, and it's got quite heated, but they're about to get back in, and we're just walking along, and kind of keeping an eye, as you do. As these two lads get in their car and start to pull away, another guy starts to pull in front of them because their car was stopped, so obviously he's just pulling in front. They pull away, so he stops and brakes, and he's looking over going, I was just pulling in front of you. And the lad in the driver's seat's like, don't cut me up, blah blah blah. And the guy's saying, I was just pulling in front of you. The lad gets out, opens the guy's passenger seat, climbs across it and punches him in the face.
Heavy.
He then gets out to go round the other side. His mates go out at this point as well. They go round, drag the guy out of his car, or punch him a few times in his seat. Then he gets out. And that's the bit like, we're kind of looking, going, what the fuck? He gets out, and I can't really remember if he's fighting or they're fighting or he's chasing him. They then end up in between their two cars. And the short lad...
That's two against
one. So it's two against one, yeah, the short lad. But the other guy, the taller guy, seems to be trying to calm it down. But these two are arguing. The driver of the car has been punched a load, and the driver of the car has been doing the punching. Then the big lad behind him starts to pull him away, but clearly he's choking him. So from behind him, he just puts his arms round his neck. He's pulling him away. Can't see if the other lad's punching him, but it looks like he might too. So start to take a few steps forward. Then the guy goes unconscious. So he's choked this guy unconscious, and he puts him on the floor. And I can see him at this point. And as bad as these two kids are, the bad guys, the tall guy just choked him unconscious, in my opinion, was shitting himself.
Mm.
He then starts thinking, I've killed a dude. And he's like, what's wrong with this guy? You saw it. It wasn't my fault. And at this point...
God, this is crazy.
At this point, because I'm looking around, and it's weird, the hive mentality of us humans, because I'm looking around and no one's getting involved. And it's two on one. And I'm looking around with everyone else going like, fuck, this mental. And then I suddenly went, oh shit, that's real life and it's there. So I step in. So I go into the road and I pull the tall lad off him, and I bring him round. Because again, this is as stupid as it sounds, but because we watch a lot of MMA and I've trained a bit of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I know that if you're choked unconscious, it's not nice, but it's all right. As long as you're looked after... It's all right.
As long as when they release the choke when you go out, otherwise you're fucked.
Yeah, you're
dying. And that's it. So I'm like, I pull this guy off him, he comes round and I stand him up, and he's covered in blood. He's got blood all over his shirt. So I get him to his feet.
So is this at the point, because obviously when he's being choked, some other prick's hitting him?
No, that's what I've wondered, but I think what actually happened, because he was bleeding from his chin. So I reckon the kid had a watch or something.
Watch.
So where he's struggling, he's cut him open. But it looks bad. And I spoke to Stu afterwards, and he was saying he panicked, because he thought they'd stabbed him. Because you see one holding him, you see him covered in blood and dropped to the floor unconscious. He thought he'd stabbed him. But so I've jumped in and I've pulled the tall one off, and I'm saying like, what the fuck you doing? I take the tall one, for some reason, had this guy's phone. So I get that off him and I give the guy his phone, and I'm like, it's all right. And he's like, because he was confused, because if you've ever been knocked out or unconscious, you know it. You wake up kind of feeling like a baby.
What happened?
It's kind of confusing, isn't it? It's a really weird kind of numb feeling. So he starts to call the police, and the driver has driven off. And I'm arguing with the tall one still, and I'm like, what the fuck? And he was like, you saw it was his fault. Like, we'd just been crashed into. And I was saying to him, no. He didn't fucking crash into you, though.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not his fault. You're saying it's not your fault. It's not his fault. Then the driver comes back and says, like, everyone saw. Yeah, you call the police. Everyone will see. And then the two of them dart. So they have gone. So this guy's in a bad way. He's covered in blood. He's been unconscious. And he's like, he's on the phone to the police. And he was like, did you see everything? I was like, yeah, I pulled him off you and picked you up. Like, because again, he'd lost it all. And he's like, are you all right to stick around for the police as a witness? So I'm like, yeah, of course. Didn't get their number plate in the heat of it all.
So what sort of people are these? You know, are they...
It's two young lads. It's two young, fiery lads.
Right.
Like Larry Estate type lads.
Lad-lads.
Lads, all kicking off and being, oh, come on.
And the other fella?
Yeah, middle age, mid to late 30s. So not middle age, or whatever that age is.
Yeah.
Mid to late 30s. And yeah, he seemed calm enough. I honestly don't... They obviously thought he was having a go when they started to pull out. But I think he was just saying, look, I was just pulling in front of you because you're blocking the road. So they've gone, I'm calming this guy down. I get him to move his car because his car's blocking the road. And regardless of anything, it's going to end up in another fight because it's London and it's late at night. And I get him to move his car. Then we're waiting for the police. And an ambulance goes past in one direction. A police car goes past in another direction. Another police car goes past. And I see him pull over. So I run over to him to go, oh, it's over here. I figure they can't find him. As I get to them, they're walking into a kebab shop. And I'm like, are you here for the... There was a guy just choked unconscious. And they're like, no. Nah,
we're on our
break.
Sheesh.
So, but they were on their break, so it's fine. So the police eventually come. Again, that's kind of the end of the story. I go off as a witness. I told Stu and Mutt to go home because I had my car. So I'm like, look, there's no point in them. They've got last trains to get, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But then I had to just go and give a statement, and it's the longest, slowest thing. And
that scares me.
Struggling to get computers to work. And again, all respect to the policemen because they were lovely and looked after everyone. And often if you're there as a witness, I've had this in a few other accidents and that I've witnessed or been around for, they can be a bit dismissive or it's nothing to do with you, stat. You know, they were receptive. And I was kind of, look, not in a dickish way, but I can probably tell you more than he can because he was choked unconscious and you're hazy for a beginning and after of that. But yeah, it's kind of, it took a while to get the computers working, to get everything working. But yeah, I gave my statement.
Pretty
they
crazy.
Asked if I'd be willing to fight to testify in court. And they're like, because you will have to, the guys, like, if we catch them, they would see your face. I'm like, mate, it took two of them to pick on one bloke and then they shit themselves when they choked him out. It's like, I'm fine being seen by a couple of mugs. But yeah, that was the exciting night out that I've teased.
Pretty crazy. Yeah.
But it's just amazing the hive mind of humans, because the fact is everyone was stood there going, oh, fucking hell, it's 2-on-1. There was about 10 of us.
You see,
so it would have been 11-on-2 if all of us, if all of our natural reaction was to intervene. But because it wasn't, it slows all of us down. Mm. And again, I felt bad when I was giving the statement, because they're like, it was 2-on-1, and I'm having to say, and then he punched him, and then they punched him again. And they're like, and where were you? I was like, I was watching. It's like, damn, why wasn't I doing anything like that? Again, I still feel pleased because I stepped in and did whatever happened. Yeah, but it's a weird one, the way that
you get that when you watch, when you things happen, unfold on trains as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's some people who are stepping, and there's and many people, and that's not having a go at anyone for that, that they feel that it could be a risk to step in. You know, you don't know if the other person's got a knife, so people get
worried
about
that. One of my very good friends, right, years and years ago, my band was playing at the garage, and we sound checked it, and we went and sat in the field behind it. We just had a fag and had a couple of beers before the first band come on. And we literally, I think it was the five of us and a couple of the other guys' girlfriends. And we got surrounded by maybe 10, 11, and I'll say maybe 16, 17 year olds. And you instantly know when a situation's going to go.
Yeah.
And I said to the singer, I went, this is going to go. And as I went to stand up, someone whacked me on the back of the head. And I got knocked over. Jeez. And then I just kind of, sort of jumped into, like, whoever was in front of me. And it went right off. And it was pretty grim. And my bass player had, his collarbone fractured. And it was pretty dark.
It was painful.
But at one point, when it was all going off, my really good friend was standing across the other side of the road, sort of restraining his then girlfriend to come back and help sort this. And it's made no difference to my relationship to him because I love him dearly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to him, why didn't you help?
Yeah, yeah.
And he went, because I was scared.
Yeah.
And
it's so humans and it's so normal, isn't
and
it?
And I just so and that's resonated in me.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of instances where he's got into situations that he can't get out of, and I've kind of generally gone and stepped in and ended up kind of dealing with it.
Yeah.
And he's disappeared.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he went, he'd never once go, well, you know, I thought about it. He just went, I was just really scared. Yeah, I can't do things like that.
I have a lot of respect for that.
And it's just that. I'm scared. And what can I say to that?
In that moment, I completely... And Tolkien has said to other people stood there, who at that time we were all saying, it's so risky because you don't know if they've got a knife or whatever else. Mm. But that was exactly... I think I stood there for a minute because of that and then just went, hang on.
And also, I think
they've got a knife. That's
the more
you
get exposed to those things,
because this is going to get even.
You get exposed to those sort of decision making process early in your life sometimes, and so you might get exposed to things that then you get more comfortable in those situations to feel that you're not equipped, but almost like that's the default response for you.
We've discussed are some of the things we do and don't want to talk about in this. And one of the things that you were saying, Chris, is we don't really want to talk about any particularly fights or things like that that don't come across well. Yeah, but we don't have to go into detail, but you're one of the people I know who's been in more fights than a lot of my mates. But no, but honestly, I rarely think they're bad stories, because this isn't insulting either, because you've always been quite small and not particularly tough looking.
Yeah.
And generally, when I've seen you in a fight, it's been against someone far bigger than you that's being a bully or being a dick, and you've smashed the shit out of them. And again, this isn't... This sounds stupid because we talk about MMA a lot and now we're talking about street fights, but... I'm not pro-violence any way. No. I don't like... People sometimes on Facebook will send me videos of like street fights in Russia or stuff like that because I'm into MMA. It's like, no, I'm into the beautiful sport of MMA. I'm not into watching horrible people just beat the shit out of each other. But the thing that I've always respected that, because as I said, it's often you're... It's not like you've ever been a bully or ever started anything unreasonably. Or I don't know if you have. The stories that I know tend to be someone's acting up and you've gone, in your head, this is eventually going to turn into a fight. So the best thing I can do is act now and act quickly and get it over with and not get hurt kind of thing. And
I guess so. When I was a kid, like when I was 8 or 9, I think I saw Karate Kid, and I started doing that crane kick.
Yeah.
And I started kicking the living shit out of our sofa. And my dad was like, we got to sort this out.
Paint the fence, Chris.
So I did. But he made me pay. Wash your car, paint your fence. I hate this bike. So they sent me to karate, and I was obsessed with it. And I think I got a black belt in under 2 years. I think I was 10, black belt. And so I was always comfortable in aggressive situations because I'd spar with, you know, people a lot. Yeah. And when you have that understanding of self-defense, you know, when you watch a street fight, it's almost like in slow motion because of how people swing punches, and you learn how to block and counter. So I've always been comfortable. And I don't know if it is my size, but I remember that almost the first trouble I ever got into as a kid was I didn't even know the kid was just getting bullied at near my niece's house. And I've always ended up falling into that. And I always felt that I was doing something good by getting into those conflicts and standing up for people. I make myself sound like a white knight here, I can assure you I'm not. But I think at 24 was the last time I had a tumble it was a couple of blokes in Basildon. And after a fight, no matter what happens, I always feel awful that I've hit someone, like really bad. And,
but that's the interesting thing is you'll feel that either way.
Yeah.
Like I felt after this incident, I was... It was playing on my mind for ages. I was like, I fucking hope they come back because I wish I'd smacked one of them. Or, to be honest, the dude's choke was awful. I wish I'd put a good rear naked choke on him. It wasn't cinching, he was squeezing, so it wasn't technique, it was power. So it was a terrible choke. So, but generally, like Mutt and Stew were both like, you're all right, mate, because I was pacing about afterwards because I'd had that little bit of involvement. But in my mind, I'd got involved too late. And the guy was fine in the end and all this, and it was right. But exactly that, I think if you end up get either way in a fight, if you don't act, you'll be telling yourself it was the right thing to do. I didn't resort to violence. Mm. I've done the right thing. But you'll spend all night going, I wish I just punched him.
Yeah.
And equally, if you punch him, you'll be going, I should have walked away. I shouldn't have.
And,
you know,
and sometimes you punch people, you miss away them. Then. Like, you sometimes...
Sorry, that's a private joke.
You sometimes think,
oh gosh.
When you walk away, you think, is he all right?
Yeah, I mean that was exactly that. Again, I think that's what. And I was trying to explain this to the police. Was I was like, what had happened there is those kids had got fired up in a different incident. They'd got fired up, hadn't got in a fight, and then the first thing that happened, they kicked off and they'd overreacted because. That kid was panicking as hell when he thought something bad had happened. When that guy went limp in his arms, he was like, his face was just, he was in panic. So, it was kind of...
And you don't, someone can fall over, they can hit the curb and they die. And the other thing, the repercussions of, you know, I used to think I was doing good by stepping in, but as I got older, I realised that I wasn't. And the conclusion I came to was after the last incident, The week later, I saw those lads at a local nightclub, and they had their injuries, as it were, and they were still being knobs to people, and they saw me, and the only thing that had changed was they realised that I wasn't the one.
Yeah,
do you know
and,
what?
And that's I'm, so I'm, sad, but it people, also made people, me realise I can't help. I can't keep on.
That's
stepping.
It. I mean, the thing is, with great power comes great responsibility.
That is a great line, man.
Do you know what? I honestly think that the fight or flight,
yeah,
like decision, is one of the most primal,
yeah,
things, yeah, to deal with, because I've been in situations where I know, like, that my evening job, running clubs and stuff, I've seen so many situations where I've watched people react in really bad ways. I've watched people do things, seriously hurt people, yeah, and then panic and I've seen quite a lot of it over the years, and that fight or flight thing is that churning in your stomach of like fuck, this is really bad. This is really bad. What do I do? And yeah.
You see, there's a different kind of situation as well, is when it's the opposite of that. And I had one in my teens. I'm not sure if I knew you properly then. I must have known you a bit. But I was seeing this girl, and I'd kind of stolen her away from this guy who she was his bit on the side, essentially. He had a girlfriend who I also knew, and he was sleeping with this other girl.
I know you're talking about.
And I'd started seeing her, and this guy was like a bit of a crazy kind of dramatic dude. And I was working at HMV at the time, and he'd messaged me in that going like, I'm going to come into your work and kill you. Like I'm going to kill you when you finish work tonight and all that.
I like the fact he's letting you finish your shift.
It's nice of him. That's the worst time.
I don't want to come into work, you know. That'd be unprofessional.
I don't want to ruin anyone else's business.
Everyone's got to earn a quid, haven't they?
But he messaged me at one point, and he'd said something like, I've just been with her, or something like this. And I was like, generally I ignored him, because I was like, it's not worth feeding his craziness. And he messaged me, and he says whatever, and I just go, all right, mate, let's just deal with this. Let's meet up. And he texts me back going, meet me at midnight at the opening at One Tree Hill.
I remember this.
And I text him back going,
10.
Yes.
Generally, he's
claw back.
Meet me at midnight at the opening at One Tree Hill. And I text him back going, it's 9:15, mate. I'll see you at 10.
I'll be under the clock with a bunch of flowers.
Meet me at midnight.
Why midnight?
It's just dramatic, wasn't it? So it's all this meet me at midnight, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'll meet you at 10, mate, when we'll have a little chat. And he texts back going, all right, I'll see you at 10. No mates, no weapons. So
you put your gun back in the car?
No. I got my baseball bat and popped in the car, genuinely. Because I didn't know what was going to kick off. So I got my baseball bat and I went and picked up Tom and Jono, two of our mates, and we drive up there.
But bring the aim game.
Well, I'm like, you know, if you're feeling froggy, let's jump. So I go up there, and then this killed me. So I'm sat in the car, and I see him pull up, and he's got a mate. And this guy is a big lad who I also kind of knew, but he used to be an enforcer for one of the local drug dealers. So I know he's bought a tough lad as well. So I get out the car and start to walk over to him, and he's perched on a log. And I had that exact thing.
Froggy.
I had that exact thing of, as you, like, in my mind, I was like, you've got to act first. I was like, I can't punch this cunt off a log. I can't, he's perched on a log. And he goes like, do you want to go into the fields?
He's been very...
Are you fucking wrong with him? Going dogging?
anyway, we kind of talk and like, what's going on? Like, what's this about? Because again, I'm like, you can't keep texting me saying you're going to kill me. I don't know. Because again, I've never felt myself to be particularly tough. But
yeah,
I'd rather get the shit kicked out of me, it be over, or
and
beat someone up.
Killed. He's going to kill you.
He's going to take me in the woods. Yeah, he's going to kill me after work, as long as it's not during work.
No.
And we have a bit of a chat, and his mate, who's the enforcer guy, rings the girl and says like, "So what do you want?" And she's like, "I want him to fuck off, and I want Pip to come and pick me up." So the guy he brought along ends up telling him he's got to leave. drags him into the car, and that was the last time I saw him. He didn't get killed. He stood about, but that was how it ended. His support that he came up and went, all right, it turns out that you need to just fuck off. So
you've got it on your record as a victory, right?
Yeah, I've got definitely as a victory.
That's a win.
It's a no show.
Meet me at midnight at the opening. But yeah, it's the kind of opposite of that quick fight or flight moment. Is that it's fight or flight in the next 3 hours.
Yeah. Unless we can try and bring it forward to 10.
Yeah. I'll meet you at 10. Where do we want to go next? Do we want to talk some films and stuff in this section? We're over the hour mark
already.
Can I just spill about Chris?
Pardon?
What? What's happening?
Can I just take a piss at Chris?
Yeah, sure. Go
far
ahead.
Away.
Well, the top of my list,
swing and a miss,
is Chris crying at Adele.
Yeah. Right. What's this?
And
Chris?
Coldplay.
And Coldplay.
So, like, I got tickets for Glastonbury this year. Well, I saw the lineup, the headliners. I was like, well, I won't see either.
So you
those
cried
guys
recently over Adele and Coldplay.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is like recent. Yeah,
go
yeah
in. Sorry.
So, so I wasn't planning on watching either of those guys. But throughout the day, everyone had been pretty cool with where we went, who we watched. I got to see who I wanted to see. We got towards the end Snow of the Patrol. Nights and that, Snow Patrol.
Athlete.
Oh, my most hated band. We planned for Saturday night. We know we wanted to go to Shangri-La, which is where it all gets a bit ravey. And the guys were like, well, come and let's watch Adele before we do that. So,
if you're going to go raving, definitely watch Adele first.
Yeah,
I just want to step in quickly and say,
into a frenzy.
I rate Adele hugely. I think she's amazing. I've known her since she was a young lady.
Well, that's part of it. So anyway, we start watching Adele, and I do like her music. It's got, that's not what I'm digging out here. But we walk around the back. And thanks, mate. I don't know what that is, but
Stu's pouring some shots. I'm good, mate. Thanks, mate.
There was like, I don't know, 200,000 people that we were standing behind.
Yeah.
And listening, sing, and banging out her amazing voice. And then she started talking to everyone. It was really cool. And I was, cheers, mate. I'll drink it in a second. Give me a second. And
he's,
I realised
we used to talk
like you knew her, and I spoke to her like brief exchanges on MySpace. Just I used to listen to her music and say, oh hey, I think you're amazing.
It's right
Hometown
back in
Glory.
The day, wasn't it?
This is back in the day. Like she's got like 100 listens on MySpace.
Me, Dan, Adele, and Jack Pagnotta all played The Social in off Oxford Street.
What would Heavenly Social?
I don't know, The Social. It was just yeah. And she was on first, I think, because she was only a guitar, so it was easiest, but amazing.
And so I'd heard her songs, and I was blown away by them. And I had a little chat with her and told her how good I thought they were, and back and forth. And then to see a girl who
literally had no interest,
there was no real interest there. And then to be standing behind 200,000 people all listening to Hometown Glory, it was just amazing to see. So, like, you know, that's life. That's where life can take you. If that's what you want. And yeah, it was cool. So I got slightly emotional. I wasn't like, oh my God. But I did get a little bit watery in the eyes. Anyway, that happened, went on, had the most amazing cool night in Shangri-La at this rave called Temple. Aphrodite was there, old school drum and bass DJ. So really good. Then the next night, same thing. We'd had a good day.
The goddess of love.
The summer of love. And so... yeah, so the same day, same thing and next day, and we ended up at Coldplay, and I was like, oh, I could really not watch this, but I guess if I'm going to watch Coldplay, this is the place to watch, and they are a stadium band. I'm not on the sort of like, oh, fuck Coldplay, man, because, you know, it's cool not to like them. They have written songs that I've enjoyed, and I thought, cool, okay, I'll ride this out. And they had, like, they had for their big shows, they had... they'd given out into the audience all these wristbands. They were all full of LEDs.
Oh, this
and so
sounds
when,
so shit.
When they were playing, the whole crowd was lighting up all in different ways. And I was kind of blown away by that because I know that's cheesy, but I think just being around that many people was kind of like quite overwhelming.
Right.
Stu's pissing his pants over
here. Are you slaving him?
Just quickly, you think that's good? It's bullshit for starters. But what is far better is seeing B Dolan on the whole tour we did, where he had this song "Film the Police," which is obviously hugely important, hugely political, and it blew up to this big thing of film the place mm-hmm. in America with everything going on. And every time we performed that, it'd get all the lights turned off in the venues and get everyone to turn the flash on their phone. So a similar thing that he yeah. would just perform
yeah.
with no lights on in the whole venue and just a room. And even that, with like some venues were like 200 people, but just seeing the yeah. only light being the light of the people. And again, particularly when it's an important song that's yeah. about taking back the rights yeah. and protecting yourself in a non-violent manner, that shit's amazing. But I mean, it's cool as well if you give out glowing wristbands.
It was. I think it was just a cool combination of like modern technology and togetherness. And they did the thing that got me, like, and I found myself getting, I did get more upset there. A few tears were shed when they did a tribute to Viola Beach, which were that band who tragically died last year. And they'd said they'd seen that unfold. And, you know, just these guys with yeah. eyes full of dreams okay. who then tragically die. So we're going to do an alternate reality for them and make this song. You know, yeah, play at Glastonbury. Wicked. And I was kind of, I must say, I choked up.
Yeah, it's undeniable. That was a really lovely thing what they'd done, wasn't it? Yeah.
I wasn't like, expecting to be getting emotional on those two things. And I said to a good friend of mine who I hadn't seen for a while, and we were like, you know, I was getting, who?
Court injunction.
Yeah, that had finally been sorted. I said, oh man, I've never got emotional, like a Coldplay, and she just came out with the best one. She was like, yeah, you said that about Adele last night. So Rachel just thinks I'm just this emotional roller coaster,
mate,
who
mate.
Watches bands, wishy-washy bands, and starts crying.
No kidding, I've cried at so many gigs over the years, man. I'm terrible for it. There's a video online still, not of me crying at a gig, but it's a gig that I was at that I bawled my eyes out, and literally it's the first time I've been in a room where I would say more people were crying than not crying. In fact, I'm not sure if you were there. Is Moose Rock Wonga.
Alien Ant Farm.
Oh. Alien Ant Farm. I love Alien Ant Farm. I don't care what anyone says. But there's Moose Rock Wonga, who, mm-hmm. who you know, and you might know some of stuff. Amazing spoken word artist. Mm-hmm. And there's a video online of him performing a poem called My Past, or Your Passport, yeah. or just called Passport, actually. And I saw him perform that, and it's about him finding his dad's passport, and his dad passed away, and his plane was shot down when he was going out to give medical aid to a civil war, essential resistance. And he does this poem, and number one, most times I listen to it, I well up. But I was listening to it with his sister and his mum in the room, and he just does this, him tears running down his face as he gets to the big ending. And honestly, I look around that room and I've never been in a room with that. And it's a beautiful thing, yeah, really, yeah. that catharticism, that word. It's beautiful, right. When there's a load of people all experiencing that at once. But, yeah. man, that was... Yeah. And I said there's a video of that gig on YouTube, and I post it most Father's Days, because I think it's one of the most beautiful performances
that's beautiful.
Ever.
And I think
Father's Day and Emotional Records.
Yeah,
Tank Park Salute by Billy Bragg. He will slay you.
I don't know.
Slayer. It's this... It's his tribute, and it's if you've never heard it, Tank Park Salute.
Okay. Mate, I mean, as we're on kind of emotional and crying at gigs, I saw...
Break Stuff.
And Break Stuff. I did a post
it's just
recently.
One of those days.
I have recently been listening to... I've recently been listening to a lot of Cyndi Lauper, and I rate Cyndi Lauper hugely.
Yep.
And I go on about this, and a lot of people online don't agree.
She's been over here recently, hasn't she?
She did Glastonbury. She did an acoustic stage at Glasto, and apparently it was amazing. She did a Prince tribute there, because her and Prince were close. But I saw her in Brighton, and number one, she's amazing, because she's such a good talker in between. She's a proper New York... crass, foul-mouthed, just hilarious middle-aged woman or whatever. But then when she did True Colours, just her and this kind of weird guitar thing that she plays it on, it's like...
She plays like the slide guitar, doesn't she?
Sitar?
But it's not a slide one. It's it's a weird variation of a slide guitar. It's not a sitar, but it's this weird instrument. And she just played that, and seeing her perform that in Brighton, obviously... the gay capital of the UK, and True Colours being a hugely anthemic gay rights song. Mate, I was in a state. I was bawling. I was like, this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And just seeing her just performing it with no band, no anything else, I love that shit. There's nothing wrong with crying at gigs. That's a good thing.
I like that. I like that. I just like that collective feeling there as well.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, we're going to wrap this episode up now, and we're going to go on to part two. A few things we're going to talk about in part two. We're going to talk about some movies. In fact, we're going to start part two with movies, because there's a film I want to talk about, which follows on from this, a film I went to see.
Bone Tomahawk. At the Dulwich. Nothing to do.
No, at the Dulwich Picture Gallery, called Victim, that I very much want to talk about. We're also going to talk about a dream I had involving PM Dawn and comedian Brett Goldstein's face.
And I Brett spoke Goldstein's about PM Dawn today.
Really?
PM Dawn at the Radio 1 Roadshow in Southend supporting Kingmaker in about 1990. Yeah.
We're also going to talk about Stu's story about DJing in Dartford.
No.
We're going to talk about Fight Week, because obviously the Fight Week where Chris stayed at mine for UFC 200. If you're not into fights, it's okay, because we also talk about him playing Doom, us periscoping, so many quotes from Chris that are just hilarious. I give a rough estimate on how many farts Chris lit.
Chris's hat.
We're going to be talking about some stories of my brother in the library. What things would you like to discuss?
Your brother with his shirt off.
His shirt off. So there's going to be a lot to talk about. There's a lot more to get into in part two. Thank you for tuning in. Part two will be out any second now, I'm sure.
You've been listening to Scooby's Picks Discretion Pieces.